So I think,
like, you stepped right into your calling here. About
I might have found
years
something
too late.
I'm gonna try to go to the Olympics.
The coxswain. No, the coxswain's always like a
100-pound
girl.
Yeah. He's like a jockey,
right? The jocksman, if you will.
What we do here is go back.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wheel Route Podcast, mildly legitimate conversation amongst friends, betwixt friends and lovers about college football and lifestyle. You can find us on the internet, www.thewheelroute.com. Wheelroutepodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Get the show from Apple Podcasts, get it on Spotify, find us on the internet, your pocket casts, things of that nature. Wheel Route Podcast on Instagram as well. My name is Logan Whitehouse on Twitter at LogoOnTheDawn. Mostly just keeping a beady eye on the transfer portal these days. That's basically what Twitter has been reduced to. But I'm in Stuart, Florida, where, you know, guys, I'm not going to complain that it's chilly. I went for a walk this evening. It was a little chilly. All right. It's okay. We got through it. I understand you guys are dealing with some real weather. Shout out to the man in charge of the weather machine. He's been doing a good job recently. Got to hand it to him.
Thrilled for you and your weather machine, Logan.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Jordan Schenk. I am in Harrisonburg, Virginia, where it remains cold. The wintry precipitation remains blanketing our grounds in the valley. Nice to look at. Not great for off-season golf improvement opportunities, but that's okay. Sometimes you got to shut it down and work on the mentals. I'm on social medias at Schenk Jordan. Watched my first, I guess, full TGL match last night. I think my two takeaways from last night, I think they really need to lean into, like, let's jump the shark. Like, let's not do a foot in the serious pool and a foot in the like, this is fun and giggly. Let's make it really obnoxious and vibes.
Yeah.
One of the content guys, one of the ones I like, said that they need to just mostly go like just go to Mario Kart. Like, give me some speed boost.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Give me some.
Time.
Did we? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It's been so long. I miss you guys.
The whole Tiger Woods walk out in the fog machine, like, was so cringy. And
it's pretty, it's pretty corny. I mean,
he's one of the co-founders. It's his, like, vehicle. Yes. I get it. But let's make this thing ridiculous and get some eyeballs on the product. Second, I hope last night shames one Kevin Kisner into maybe hitting the speed bag, finding some gains somewhere. That was brutal. I almost felt bad for him, but sometimes public embarrassment is the kick in the pants you need to really, like, step things up.
The catalyst.
He's a good sport. He's at least a good sport about it, it would appear, by all accounts. So that's good. But yeah, I'm with you. I texted you guys. I think Kevin and I may be cruising in the same zone, in the sub Charlie Woods ball speed zone.
Flying at the same altitude.
You know, not good.
That being said, he did have almost certainly the most shared moment of the night when he fired the bunker shot off the pin, which was objectively hilarious, but probably not ideal for the competitiveness.
I think part of the issue, Jordan, that is, the competitiveness is kind of interesting, but the golf chatter is funny amongst, like, golf purists, but, like, it's not necessarily, like, I mean, like, Colin Morikawa making, like, kind of just like a stray reference about, I guess I'll put this or you're, you know, whatever, like, is something that, like, only appeals to, like, true golfers, right? Not even, like, casual golfers. And I think there's a lot of, like, we expect Max Homa to be funny and engaging because like we like listening to Max Homa be funny and engaging. And I'm not saying he's not a funny, engaging person, but like you're putting a lot of eggs in the Max Homa is going to be carrying the ship basket on like a night like last night. Tiger notoriously like, you know, not the best like talker, you know, on the mic kind of guy. The way that golfers give each other grief again, you know, not exactly like actually funny. Like what did Colin Morikawa run out and like touch Kevin Kisner's arms? Like, oh, because he gassed the first shot and then proceeded to leave everything like 40 yards short the rest of the night, which is funny. But I don't know. It's bumpy. They need to figure some stuff out. Like, I mean, it's interesting and it's a cool concept, yeah. But I don't love it.
I also imagine there's some hesitancy to like really chirp each other because it's live and all hot mics.
Of course.
Right. So it's like you can't really go for it the way you might. No,
that's like to me, that's more entertaining than watching simulator golf on TV. Like, sure. But that's just me. You know, I love a human interest story. But anyhow, they got some kinks to work out. That's all right.
When it's really humming and like the pace is good, particularly in the early, like the first 45 minutes, it's like you can see the vision. And I like that. Yeah. They got to figure out a way to, I don't know if 2 hours is the right length for a match. Like, I don't know if they need to shorten it or like the intermission just kills it. And so like, I think they got some stuff to work out to make it fresh down the stretch. Now, maybe it'll be better if it's, you know, 6-5 coming down the stretch instead of the past two, like 9-1s. But yeah, they have a second hour problem. So
people anyways, my name blowouts. Yeah, what's your name? Tell me. True.
My name is Jason Craig.
Hey,
it's good to see you guys.
We're back.
From here in my abode in Harrisonburg, Virginia, the friendly city. Pretty chilly today. Still a lot of snow on the ground. Still a lot of just condensed piles of snow in the parking lot of my townhouse. Thankfully, they are out of the way, but where I park is like right up against one of the little islands. And so there's some, you know, the Xterra is four-wheel drive. We're not worried, but it's a bit of a nuisance.
Lucky you drive a big rig that's capable, that's designed, purpose-built for these kind of conditties. Jordan, you'll be happy to know our favorite beer sales rep from across the mountain has informed me that Mount Chipotle is indeed back.
I've seen pictures.
By the Chipotle in Charlottesville, so that's cool. Love that. Yes. Very good. What are you guys drinking tonight?
Well, it's our final trip to Pickville to make a pick. So I'm riding once more this season with my pick juice for the uninitiated. That is a splash of Tito's on ice, bathed in lemon Spindrift.
How's your Tito's stock going? Have you had to reload?
No, because I really only use that like for this and if I maybe want a Bloody Mary on like a Saturday morning.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Wake up, knock down not 1 BM, 2 BMs, am I right? Got it.
Well, yeah, and depending on how the coffee is brewed, maybe 3 BMs.
Maybe 3 BMs. Jason, what do you got, man?
Proud of you. I am back on my smoking Scottish BS. I am. I cleaned the whole kitchen yesterday, so I'm cleaning out the refrigerator today.
Okay, nice. Like actually cleaned out the refrigerator, or are you just cleaning it out like metaphorically, like of the beers?
I'm getting beers. The last of the beers. I did the refrigerator was part of the cleaning yesterday. Threw out some food that had been there for a bit, and just good. Tidied it up. Got my house in order.
The crisper drawer is ready and waiting for some more Yuengling lights.
Ready for another 30 rock.
Awesome. I'm working on a Element sparkling electrolyte water this evening. Shout out. You guys can't see
my
screen. Yeah.
All your holiday spirit is making it unseeable.
Your boy is going to be whizzing tonight. They're going to be calling me the Wizinator. They call me Ontario Smith around here, the Wizinator. So, anyhow, All right. Anybody got anything they want to get off their chest? Any updates, news and notes?
Jordan, you want to talk about Florida Gators basketball or no?
No.
Wound still too fresh.
I mean, I've made my peace. It's all, that's on me for
was that a road game? Leg.
No, it was home.
Oh, wow. That's not good. Yeah, that's not good then.
The seven-leg money line parlay on a Tuesday night is ambitious. Like, that's on me. Got to do better.
Fair. Speculative.
Yeah, Florida, what are they? They're like one and two in their last three, but the one win was a 30-point thumping of the number one team in the country. So, yeah, I could see they're on kind of a weird every other game they play well. For what I've seen, when they're playing well, they're awesome. But they, you know.
Don't they have a 7'8" guy not playing at all right now?
Yeah, I believe he's 7'9". And, yes, right. Oliver Ryu or something like that.
Yeah,
he's very tall. Extremely tall.
Yeah.
Excited to see him patrolling the paint, just asking for the rock. He moves like a guy that's 7'9". I think that's why he's redshirting. They gotta teach him how to like run and like pick his hands up and stuff. So
existence based too. Yeah.
Not always easy down there.
Oh. I saw the Dukes have a transfer quarterback that we are familiar with.
Yep. I kind of figured that was gonna happen, but the Dukes got the official commitment from one Matthew Sluka yesterday. Of UNLV NIL drama fame.
Okay.
Yeah, should be interesting. He's reuniting with his coach. He was at Holy Cross before went to UNLV. And so going to play for, and what was the last nickname we settled upon for Coach Chesney?
Bobby Ched.
Bobby Cheddar, that's right. I can't remember. It was causing me actual strife yesterday. It's coming to Harrisonburg to play for Bobby Ched. And, it should be interesting. There's a lot of
stuff. He's not like a gifted thrower of the football, is he?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, awesome.
So it'll be interesting. We added two quarterback transfers in one day yesterday.
Wow.
Sluka and then the University of Richmond's starter from this year who did very well at the FCS level. So probably some sort of battle amongst them and the freshman who played in the bowl game. There is plenty of speculation given the two additions yesterday that Alonzo Barnett will probably not be ready for the season, but nobody knows anything for sure.
So JMU potentially could be rolling into next season with Barnett, two transfers that probably both think they're going to start, and this kid who played the bowl game that like actually looked like he knew what was going on.
He was the offensive MVP of the bowl game.
Well, yeah. There was – all right. They had to pick someone to be the offensive MVP of that bowl game, to be fair, Jason.
He ran for two touchdowns and threw for another one. He threw the Tebow jump pass.
Correct.
Yeah.
All three of the touchdowns that were scored in that game were scored by him, which is good. So no, you're right.
Pretty much made it unanimous.
He needed to. Anyway, yes, he needed. There was no doubt that he was the offensive MVP. Saying it was not because of
by virtue of elimination. He was the
MVP. Right.
But yes, it's depending on Barnett's health. There could be four people who think they should be taking the snaps with the ones, and should be fun competition. Iron sharpens iron, boys.
That's what Bobby Cheddar always says.
Yeah, Bobby Cheddar often tells us. So it'll be interesting. Spring should be fascinating in Bridgeport Stadium.
How much of a discount on Sluka the Dukes got from his reported UNLV
contract
bag,
problems.
Considering that once he left, UNLV almost improved?
Kind of immediately got better. Yeah. No idea, but who knows?
Somebody knows.
Somebody knows. I shouldn't say who. Nobody sitting on this couch right now is privy to that information.
Okay. We'll see what we can dig out.
Yeah. Well, we can check the sources, but we'll see.
Who do I have to FOIA?
Should be.
Dan, didn't we see Dan Mullen picked up Alex Orji?
Yeah,
at UNLV. Do they have? You said, Jordan, they have another quarterback, right?
Yeah, his name is Anthony Calandria, Logan.
Oh, that's right. Anthony Calandria.
Oh, yes.
I forgot. I was going to ask where Calandria ended up. I totally forgot.
What's the name? The guy who played the rest of the season for him is gone, right?
Tony Musket?
Them being Virginia?
No. Sorry. UNLV.
I couldn't tell you. I would imagine he's gone if they brought in two ultra high level flamethrowers at the position.
The guy who ran guys. Hodge Malik Williams.
Oh yeah.
He was a senior. Okay. I think he's done.
Okay.
But who knows? People just pull years of eligibility from their back pockets here and there, so maybe he's going somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. Mm.
Okay, Jordan, maybe it's time to revisit Pickfills of the years past, of the year past, of the week past.
Yeah, week and a half past-ish.
Yeah, it's been a bit.
Yeah, so listeners, we did, in fact, pick the semifinal games against the spread that took place 9-10 days ago-ish. The results are in. The ballots have been counted. Logan wins round semifinal at 2-0. Jason and I both went 1-1. Logan secures an above 500 performance on the year.
Slams the door on it, frankly. You know,
leaves no doubt. With much authority. Like the offensive MVP in the
Super Bowl.
He left no doubt.
The unnamed third string quarterback at JMU.
Yeah. Out of respect, he's unnamed. our first game in this penultimate round of the playoff was the Orange Bowl. It happened at 7:30 p.m. on a Thursday. That has since passed. Notre Dame and Penn State tangled with each other. Guys, I really felt good about Penn State for about a quarter, and then halftime happened. And I don't know if they're putting something in their water at halftime. I understand Coach Freeman to be a very effective motivator, leader of men, things of that nature. Feels like looking back on it, and yes, I'm a little bit biased because I was on Penn State here, but feels like Penn State lost this more than Notre Dame won it. In some regards, felt like Kotelniki was very much feast or famine. Probably went tempo at the wrong time on too many drives. They were just like, oh, we go 14 plays and score a touchdown, or we go 3-and-out, or we go 15 plays and score a touchdown, or we have 4 plays and punt. So no real rhythm from Penn State in the second half offensively. Bad interception by Aller there at the end put Notre Dame in position to kick a winning field goal. No disrespect to Notre Dame at all. It just felt like Penn State had this, and then for whatever reason, they kind of departed from some of the run game that was working in the first half really well. I don't know. It feels like a missed opportunity for big game James and his boys.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think that probably the nature of these two teams, I think probably lends itself to feeling like one team gave it away, just because I don't think either of these teams were – it was never going to look like one team just went out and took it and like just ran the other team off the field or anything like that. These are two very risk averse teams. And so the difference was probably always going to be one or two boneheaded things. I don't think Notre Dame did those things and Penn State did one or two of them. And that was the difference. That's how you get, a field goal 5 seconds left or whatever went in the game. But this game was pretty not fun to watch for like 45 minutes. And then the fourth quarter was super fun. So
the Undertakers were rejoicing for most of this game until the fourth quarter happened.
Yeah, and the fourth quarter
we did not have a yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was definitely a hard-nosed football game. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I was mostly just finishing this was kind of the game we expected. It was a very physical game, a lot of just headbutting each other up and down the field. Riley Leonard just doing Riley Leonard things and just drunk babying his way into traffic. Somehow still likable. I don't know how that works, but I enjoyed this game more than I thought I would, and definitely more than I thought I was going to at like the 3-minute mark in the third quarter, when I thought it was going to end 13-10 in two overtimes somehow. But two very, very good defenses. And two offenses that were very focused on not shooting themselves in the foot, and then one accidentally did, and that was the difference. So, yeah. On brand.
Yeah, not a great night at the office for either quarterback. Aller particularly disappointing with his performance, 12 for 23, 135 yards, and a really bad pick. Did not complete a single pass to a wide receiver all night long, which is a bizarre stat. But
wild. Yes.
Kind of lends to sort of, I think, what we have suggested could be the issue with Penn State and, you know, some of these teams just not awesome skilled players, but really great individual effort. Christian Gray, touchdown run in this game too, was cool to see, with the knee brace, I think, on at the time, just like powering through multiple people at the goal line. That was,
he got like stood up and was underneath another defender at like the three and somehow scored.
Is that Gray or is that Jeremiah Love?
Gray's DB, my bad. Jeremiah Love. You're right. It's Jeremiah Love. He led the team in rushing, 46 yards, you know, not a huge, you know, productive day really for anybody. But I think what was really important for Notre Dame was Riley Leonard got knocked out of the game, looked like he had a concussion, and Angeli, the backup, came in and led a crisp drive to get a field goal right before halftime that, like, I thought really gave Notre Dame, like, a shot of life that they needed bad. I was really, like, I didn't want to be the hot take artist of, like, let's let Angeli, like, sling it a little bit. But he definitely looked more comfortable, like, standing in the pocket and, like, throwing the football than Leonard does. But, you know, on third and anything less than four, like, you know what's coming for Notre Dame. You know, Riley Leonard's going to run it, and he's typically going to get the first down. And, you know, that's what, kind of like you were saying with Kotelnicki's, sometimes they just get a little cute and have a weird drive, and they just, you know, it's got a little Sark in him, right? You know, they just, like, randomly just have bad drives and throw it away. And, and Notre Dame didn't really do that. I mean, they held on to the ball a little longer, although the time of possession is, like, virtually identical in this game, which is crazy.
There was a drive, I think it might have been Penn State's first drive out of the half, where they were backed up close to their own goal line. First down, they hit a big-ish pass to the large tight end, and they just, like, sprint to the line and fire off two duds of plays. So now all of a sudden you're, like, you're in third and long. Your defense has not really gotten the rest that's commensurate with, like, a 35-yard gain from your four, you end up punting. So you like, I get, okay, we want to get momentum back, but that feels like an opportunity to just, like, hey, like, just rattled off a nice play, but we have things in our hands right now. Let's not get out too far over our own skis. I think I've seen this, especially in the Michigan game, from Chip Kelly too, and that's what gave me concern about Ohio State going into the playoff, was like their play calling or their offense would just completely stall out for drives at a time. And Penn State seems to not have overcome that bugaboo. And it cost them a shot at the title. So that's showbiz, baby.
Yeah. Would agree. So, but shout out to Notre Dame. They pulled it together, yeah. Fought through some injuries. I think they lost two starting offensive linemen in this game. And, you know, were able to gut it out. Kind of like, it's corny to say, but stay in the fight, weather the storm, whatever you want to say. And, you know, Penn State could not put enough space between them, even though it felt like Penn State was pretty much dominating the first, like most of the first half of the game. You know, kind of let them mess around and stay in it and made a big mistake at the end. So onward for Notre Dame. Who would have thought?
I also wonder, like, how much that Angeli drive going into halftime that got Notre Dame points really put Penn State's staff in kind of a pretzel of, like, what adjustments, where do we focus our energy at half? Because we don't know if Leonard's coming out of the game or if he's going to be back. So do we need to, like, install right. stuff at halftime? Are we scrambling to do that? Or, you know, and so yeah. some stuff maybe gets lost in the shuffle. But
I mean, I know it's not all play calling, but like, I think Mike Denbrock is the OC at Notre Dame, and he was the guy who called plays for Jane Daniels, that's his name. All year last year at LSU and got him the Heisman. It's like the guy knows, like, it's not like he's married. Clearly he's not married to anyone's style, which I think is, I always am impressed by, but also, like, you got to think it's in there somewhere too, right? Like, this guy knows how to dial it up, you know? So I that's why I kind of wonder if they just really don't trust, ultimately deep down, they don't really trust Leonard to throw the ball that many times. So they know that their defense is good. So they would rather just play a lower variance game than like have the random 4 interception Riley Leonard game, you know, based on him kind of getting a little wonky with it. But is Riley Leonard back next year?
I think so.
I don't remember how much eligibility he has left, but I have not heard anything about, you know, for several reasons, I have not heard anything about Riley Leonard draft stock. But
was the right-handed Tim Tebow.
In terms of offseason for Notre Dame, or Penn State at least, sorry, seems like they've got a fair amount of guys coming back for unfinished business reasons. So we'll keep tabs on that. One guy who's not coming back is the DC, Tom Allen, who is going to the Church of Clemson with Pastor Dabo to install some defensive evangelism. So
Riley Leonard's his eligibility will be expired after the college football playoff is over.
Really?
Will not be back this fall.
Gone so soon.
What a career for our guy.
So does he have NFL aspirations? Like, where does he rank on McShay's list?
To me, he cannot be. He has prime Felipe Franks catching passes for the Falcons in the preseason vibes to him.
Convert him to tight end. He should have a talk with Timmy Tebow.
He is a good athlete. Shout out. Also, congratulations to Timmy Tebow, by the way. Let me be the first to congratulate Demi and Tim on the birth of the chosen one. So should that baby
the
be
impending
a baby?
Birth, right?
The impending birth. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Sorry. The announcement. But should that baby be a boy, you can go ahead and sign me up. Sign me up for some lies starting in about 16 years, and we'll just keep them going. Yeah, so
check this space for what we think of Riley Leonard is projected as a post-draft signee. Player comp, Dorian Robinson Thompson, which is what a player comp that is.
What a comp, yeah.
DTR
is getting some run, or he was at the end of the regular season. Not maybe for the reason he would want, but
yeah, the Browns.
I think so.
Yeah. All right, there was another game.
Yeah, so that was the Orange Bowl. The Cotton Bowl took place the following night. Ohio State took on Texas. Jason, as the one picker who is on Texas, as our resident Longhorns fan, admirer, expert, why don't you lead us off?
Expert.
This is honestly probably the game that we all saw coming deep down. Texas is good enough that they weren't going to get blown off the field, but they seemingly aren't good enough to do much. it's just a, it was a very weird looking game. Credit to Texas's defense. They made some adjustments. They were getting busted up in the first half and somehow held Ohio State to 14 points. It felt like,
yeah, Ohio they State were not going to let Jeremiah Smith beat them. That was very clear.
I think they were, they had like two safeties over the top,
which proved to be a pretty good, and, a pretty good game plan. I
they
think.
Clearly had the best game plan of anybody that's played them in the college football playoff. But yeah, I wonder. So yeah, they kept it close. They scored to tie it up with 30 seconds left in the first half, and then on the very next play, gave up a 75-yard dump off screen pass to Trevion Henderson to make it 14-7. And ooh, I kind of wonder.
Absolutely hit the jets.
And it was right as he was cresting through the line of offensive linemen.
Burst out the other side.
Oh, it's beautiful football imagery.
That is as ideal as you can run an end of half slash game screen. I kind of wonder what the game would have looked like had that not happened. Because Texas, I think, kind of had a lot of momentum in those last like 3 or 4 minutes of the second half, for the first half. And then it was all just immediately gone.
It's so funny because at halftime, they asked Saban about it. And he's like, well, if you're getting the ball at 25 and you only have limited time, like your first play is going to be exploratory. It's going to be either a draw or a screen. And they, for some reason, didn't seem prepared for either.
Not even a little. They dropped like eight people 30 yards back. Yeah, and
this is football for dummies, and you guys failed.
Just got like creased. Massively creased.
To divert a little bit, I do hope that is just Saban's role the rest of the way. Saban needs to stop like opining on, oh, the SEC got left out again. That's exhausting. Shut up. But what Saban needs to do is just like talk down to all these coaches. It's just, like, what are you thinking with this?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I want more than anything. I think Texas shot itself in the foot repeatedly in incredibly predictable way, and that Sark is – there might not be a better offensive coordinator for 75, 80 yards of the field, and boy, does he struggle getting into the end zone. And that bit him in the three or four times in that game. And, you know,
I mean, yeah, they had like back-to-back pass interference penalties on throws into the end zone and then proceeded to not get in on four straight. And on the fourth one, they gave up a fumble six and lost the game.
We can talk about the toss play. Part of me was like, I think I might have diagnosed this toss play as weird. And then literally everybody who watched the game was like, yeah, that was a really stupid toss play. I was like, okay, I'm not as smart as I thought it was. But
I mean, well, Sark did say if you block it up, it's fine, which is the most Dan Mullen thing of all time to say after the game. He's not wrong. Guys, the play the safety made was really good, though.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you saw the clip of Ohio State's D coordinator like go play by play on that four down stand. But he talked about like first down, we were in the big people package and they ran it up the middle and stuffed it. Second down, we were still in the big person package. And he even said like, which leaves you susceptible to stuff out on the edge. And he credited, he said it was the most football like description. He was like, Caleb Downs just really pulled the trigger and got downhill quick, blew it up. I was like, oh,
yes, he did.
He's like, he's sipping on coffee, double cupped up. I gotta find it and send it to you. It was perfect.
I do love DC.
Acknowledge like the personnel we were in, we were soft to something on the edge, and Caleb Downs just made incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he made the play. Accurate. He didn't make the tackle, but he kind of spilled the play and like stymied the momentum enough that like the pursuit got him.
He blew the whole thing up for sure.
I didn't love the play call either, just because like that particular toss, like LSU used to always do this play where they would they'd be in like I formation and then they would run like a toss straight up the middle run. I don't know if you remember that. Like,
oh yeah, the toss
Miles LSU would run that, and like, I feel like they would run that at the goal line all the time, and like, just kind of to me, it's just weird that you're tossing the ball that far back, and like the guy's not really getting much of a head start, and like, so it kind of reeked of that a little bit to me. Like, you're sort of asking for momentum to go against you, like player momentum, I guess.
I would have liked some sort of stretch play, some sort of like zone blocking play.
Well, even if you just ran like a normal toss sweep and like had a pull and guard out there, you know, rumbling around, like trying to shove someone out of the way and try to get another guy. They didn't have it blocked up right. But Sark saying if you block it up, it's fine is hilarious because I love that. I love that that is from the Dan Mullen playbook of things.
I'm gonna take that and just use it in every aspect of my life.
If you block it up, it's fine.
Bought this product, I'd be rich. It'd have been fine.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Steve.
So anyways, I think, you know, if Texas does more with his red zone opportunities, maybe the game's different, but it's worth pointing. Like Ohio State has been one of the best red zone defenses and particularly like inside the 5 and 10 in the country this year. So, you know, that's just strength on strength or strength on not strength, I guess. I think the better team won. I think, you know, Texas had a chance and
Texas was going in to tie the game up with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they were right in that thing. They were 1 yard away from tying it up with
the old classic 14-point swing. You know, most people will tell you 14-point swing, tough to stomach.
It's really the Jack Sawyer play is very awesome and will go down in the annals and as well it should.
Big dude.
I really desperately wish it could have happened to any other team in the country almost.
Fair enough.
But yeah, like dude that grew up in Columbus, Georgia, always wanted to play for Ohio State and now is an all-time legend is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah, no, that's for sure. Had the big elbow.
Yeah, he has a very unique running style and I respect it deeply. It's amazing.
Very like big football boy.
Large adult son cruising down the field for 85 yards.
I was surprised he legged it out. I mean, He didn't have the look that he had what it took to go the distance. But
he's not
a
long strider.
No, I think that's the thing. But being like 6'4", 260, and not being a long strider, it's kind of funny. But
had him churning, and I respect him.
He was pretty charming after the game, though. Got to hand it to him. Interesting teeth, also. But shout out to our guy JS. And I don't know. To me, this game was kind of like a little meh for most of it, and it was kind of fun to see it towards the end. Like
it didn't seem particularly well played.
It seemed like Ohio State left a lot on the table, and Texas, like you were saying, I mean, just you know, they didn't. Do we want to have the Quinn Ewers conversation?
One of our all-time farting around.
Like we've been having it for a couple.
I was gonna say it's been a 10-week conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean,
he did officially say he's going to the draft. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
Did. Okay. Someone will talk themselves into him being a good prospect. I mean, I think he's a fine prospect. I mean, he'll say he wasn't healthy and he'll look great in April in the combine and, you know, it'll be fun. Like, he throws the ball great sometimes, but like then there's just times where just like the lapses and like just the like four straight plays where it's just like, no, he doesn't care and it doesn't appear to care and they just like go three and out. It's just so weird.
It doesn't make a dang bit of difference to me or my life, but I'm like unusually fascinated by whether or not he will throw at a pro day or if he'll just like I'm gonna let my oblique heal and not put more bad film out there.
Yeah. But I mean, what does throwing at the pro day really get you? You know, Anthony Richardson threw the pro day and like threw the ball out of the stadium and, you know, is gonna be basically fighting for his job next year.
Well, I mean,
so.
the freaking Zach Wilson pro day like changed the course of a lot of NFL franchises.
Multiple
for better or for worse.
Well, did it really change the course of the Jets franchise?
No. In some ways,
it kind of kept it on the course that it's always been on.
It narrowed the variance.
They're passing different road signs, but they're going to the same place.
Yeah, that's true. No, I'm with you. Yeah, that throw, that Zach Wilson throw he made at that one pro day where he was like rolling left and just like grenaded it so deep, naded it. Oh, man, that was sick. But Jason, are you impressed by Ohio State's win probability graph for this Texas game? Because they really dominated. Like they left no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, they were cruising at like 75% for most of the game.
Except for, get this, the time Texas scored in the second half. All of a sudden,
checks out.
When it was tied, I was like, what? No way.
this hostility is very strange. And also the concept that I've been like preaching win probability for all these years, as if this is like the first time we've ever talked about it, is you bringing it up this year is like, you know what? Screw these people in particular.
Well, I hate it. I hate it.
No, I think I think I brought it up initially as like, oh man, this is one of the wilder charts I've seen from a game as of late. And Logan's like, oh, you know what? By the way, these suck.
Well, they do. They do. They don't really do anything. It doesn't mean anything.
I don't use them to inform decisions. Yeah, I like looking at the shapes and the lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're pretty colors. That's all we care about, Logan.
I like going to Hooters because I like looking at the shapes and the lines. Okay. So
I'm not gonna fight you on that. All right. Let's pick the national title game.
All right. Speaking of Hooters,
one game to rule them all, for all of the Owls, if you will. On January 20th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, a champion will be crowned at the end of the game that kicks off at 7:30. Ohio State, Notre Dame, for all the Tostitos and the Marbles and the Hooters wings, you can imagine.
AT&T phones, I believe.
Ohio State. At time of this recording, seems to be favored by 8.5. They opened around 9.5. It is at 8.5 now. And Jason gets to do the honors.
In which season do I finally get to not go first? Can we talk about that?
It's not going
to
be next season because you came in last this year. So
that's okay. Well, that's not been. This is the first time I've ever come in last. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
The first should be last, Jason. Remember that.
Those of us. Anyways. 8.5 is a big line. I'm going to take Notre Dame.
Wow. Did you know Marcus Freeman went to Ohio State?
What?
Have you heard that?
That's crazy. I had no idea. I just really like this Notre Dame defense. And I think Texas might have showed a little bit on how to slow down and flummox at least a little bit this Buckeye offense, which is basically put several humans around Jeremiah Smith. And I think Notre Dame can do that and still have a good enough run defense to keep Henderson a little bottled up. Ohio State obviously has other weapons, but I don't know. It always feels weird that it feels like Jeremiah Smith makes everything else go. Which makes sense. He's one of the most talented players in the country, but they have multiple other wide receivers that would be the number one at like 115 other schools. And so it's weird that they were that flummoxed last week. And generally when Jeremiah Smith gets bottled up a little bit, I think Notre Dame can do that. I think, I think Notre Dame very much knows who it is and can play that sort of risk-averse style of football. Notre Dame feels like a slightly better version of Texas on both sides of the ball. And
wow.
getting 8.5 points is a lot of points. And so I am going to take the Fighting Irish and hope they are back healthy.
Yeah, that
as healthy as they can be. That is a variable.
A good thing to hope for. I'm going to take Ohio State. I will, however, be rooting like heck for Notre Dame, which if you played that sound clip to the me of 3 or 4 years ago,
like
I have some questions.
Sure.
Oh, before you pick, do we want to talk about Brian Kelly getting called out for saying in his press conference or saying in his statement or whatever that he was like, he's like, oh, no, I never said that you couldn't win a national championship at Notre Dame. And then pretty much everybody was like, here's the transcript where you said, I wanted to go somewhere where you could win a national championship.
Oh, that's beautiful. I need to find this.
I like that. It's nobody probably takes a better public L than that guy, which is
just
great.
He wears it. At every opportunity, he just wears it. So,
yeah.
Anyways, good for Marcus Freeman. Continue, Jordan.
Yeah, good for Marcus Freeman. Absolutely. I will be pulling for Marcus Freeman and his boys. I'm picking Ryan Day and his band of mercenaries. The Notre Dame injuries concern me. Their defense is very good. it statistically is kind of mid against the run. And I think Ohio State's got the backfield firepower with Henderson and Judkins to be able to create some better passing opportunities to guys like Smith.
Notre Dame also plays horses in the back, if you will. A real horses in the back situation.
Some have said.
Yes.
Notre Dame plays a good deal of man coverage as well, I've come to learn. They're very good against it, or they're very good playing man. Ohio State is very good against man. I think Will Howard has thrown 9 TDs and 0 interceptions against man coverage this season. So it's going to be a strength on strength there. And I think I like the skill guys of Ohio State to come out on top there. Buckeyes seem to have figured out kind of the right mix of offensive line play, which is very impressive given the issues they've had there with injuries. And I still think, again, they're going to have the best offensive player on the field with Jeremiah Smith, and they're going to have the best defensive player on the field in Caleb Downs. So I will take those guys again, but I will, again, hope and pray for a Notre Dame win, because nothing would make me chuckle more heartily than watching Ryan Day come up just short.
Sure. I've never seen that before. Yeah, I like Ohio State here too. I think it's a Jimmy's and Joe's situation availability wise. Didn't really love. I mean, Notre Dame seems to be like extremely injured, not just normal end of season, you know, attrition type stuff. Lose multiple players last week on the offensive line. Don't really know what their status is. Quarterback getting hurt himself a little bit. I think Ohio State's defense is. We talked about this. I mean, they're like excellent, and I could see Notre Dame having a tough time moving it and scoring it. Maybe not getting some first downs here and there, but moving it and scoring it against Ohio State, especially given how kind of limited Notre Dame can be occasionally skill player wise. So yeah, I think Ohio State will figure it out and should not have too big of a problem covering here. I would love to see a good game. I mean, I'm not really married to either of these two teams like winning. I don't detest either of them, but I also am not like an extreme fan of Ohio State or Notre Dame. So I do think that there is some like hilariousness to the idea that Ryan Day could win the national championship in the year that like he almost got fired 3 weeks ago after losing to Michigan in just like really weird fashion. I think that that's kind of like a wouldn't it be hilarious situation. And those are fun.
Yeah,
but I'm not gonna lose any sleep over either of these teams, coughing one up.
So this is classic. You just hope both teams have fun. Spot.
I hope both teams have fun. Like to see a good game. But you know, if Notre Dame likes to play a lot of man defense and they're going to be married to that, then I think it could be good luck is kind of where I'm at. I mean, you got to hope that Will Howard comes out like a little too hot and there's some early turnover action. That kind of maybe stymies Ohio State's scripting and game flow, because if you let them get a couple scores in the first couple drives, they seem like they really, once they're confident and rolling, hard to imagine anybody that's like going to be able to stay with them.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Or close the gap.
Yeah, just ask Oregon.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's our final pick of the year of the season. We will have additional picks in 2025, just not for a while.
So sad.
We will be back next week after this game to recap the title game and for everybody's favorite segment episode of the year, in which we take some accountability for our goals from 2024. We face some music. Some hard truths, and we set some new benchmarks for ourselves in 2025. So pretty pumped for that. And boys, I hope your lists are already, you know, kind of working, and we're not waiting last minute to put those together. I think we owe the listeners that much.
Right. I don't I don't think I did great goals wise. Looking forward to redemption. Maybe my year for 2025 will be redemption. You know,
the year of redemption.
The year of redemption.
The year of redemption. These are the days of Elijah. Am I right? I knew Jordan would like that one. That's just for Jordan.
I can still hear it like it was yesterday.
So you gotta really get kind of doo-woppy with it.
Behold, he comes.
Oh, a true banger.
The best.
All right, very good. Well, we look forward to seeing you guys next week. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's the Wheel Route Podcast is what we are. At Wheel Route Podcast, Instagram, wheelroutepodcast@gmail.com is the email address. You can go to thewheelroute.com and check our math on the pick spreadsheet, and you can stream the show there. You can tell your friends about the website, too, if they want to go there. That would be great. Until we meet again, we love you guys. Go Gators.
Go Hoos.
Go Dukes.